We are still in the book of Job. So if you would turn to Job. And a little summary for those of you that weren't here last time, or just to get everyone caught up, we looked at the first three chapters of the book of Job. And we found out that Job was described as being blameless and upright. And we also looked at that didn't mean that Job was without sin. Job was blameless and upright. You know, he was a man of integrity, character. He was trying to live and follow God's way, but it didn't mean that he was without sin. We also saw that Job was a very powerful and wealthy individual. You know, he had many physical possessions and family. You know, Job was a man of position and character in his time. And then we see that Satan has a discourse with God about Job, and Satan proceeds to attack and afflict Job. And he loses his possessions, he loses his family, and then finally he is tested with his health and his physical being attacked by Satan. And when Satan was just sure in his discourse with God that Job is obeying you for a reason, you know, because you give him all these things and because you protect him, you know, let me start taking some of that stuff away and Job will curse you. Job will turn his back on you. That's what he was saying. So through all of those calamities and through all of those sufferings, we see in those first three chapters that Job did not turn his back on God. He did not curse God. And so Satan's plan backfired, so to speak, on him. It was, you know, Job held fast and did not curse God. But what we're going to look at this time is we're going to start in chapter 4. That's where Job's three friends are going to give him some advice. We saw there also in chapter 3, you know, his friends came and they sat with him. You know, while Job mourned, they sat with him for a week, just sat in silence with him. And then Job kind of knew that trouble was coming. We saw at the end of chapter 3. You know, it may be a reference, or it may be that Job knew that with his three friends coming to comfort him and to help him, he might have had a little idea as to what they were going to do, the advice they were going to try to give him. So we start out in chapter 4 is Eliphaz. And I hope I'm pronouncing that right. If I'm not, I hope you'll overlook that, but I'll do the best I can. But Eliphaz here was probably the oldest and probably the wisest of these three friends. And that's why he is going to go first. And he's likely also going to be the kindest to Job in terms of what he says. But if you really look at all the things that he says to Job, he wasn't really that nice to him. But out of the three friends, he probably was the nicest to him. We won't read all the verses. We'll read some of the key ones. But I'd also ask or mention to you at the end of the last Bible study to read the rest of Job and to read all of these conversations that his three friends had had and the discourses that Job had had back, and that we would kind of skip through those pretty quickly. But we probably won't get all the way through all of that. We'll go as far as we can. And there's one or two individuals in the back going to raise their hands when they've had enough. So if I just close my books and walk away, you know, they raise their hands. I won't mention any names. But anyway, starting out here in chapter 4, Eliphaz gives his speech first. And we'll start out in verse 2. If one attempts a word with you, you will become weary. But who can withhold himself from speaking? You know, surely you have instructed many, you have strengthened weak hands. Your words have upheld him who was stumbling, and you have strengthened the feeble knees. But now it comes upon you, and you are weary. It touches you, and you are troubled. Is not your reverence your confidence, and the integrity of your ways your hope? So Job, as we'll see further into the chapter, Job was a counselor. Job was a man of position in his city. And we'll see that later on. Job was very well respected. He was a counselor to people. He was a comforter to others. They would come to him for advice and comfort. And Job would offer that to them. And people respected what he had to say. He had, in a sense, a very high position in the city that he was in. So now he's going through some terrible sufferings. He's lost all of his wealth, his family, and he's got these terrible boils that he's experiencing. So Job is really, really far from where he used to be, going through some terrible, terrible things. And so he at one time was a counselor and a comfort to others, and now he's in need of that himself. In verse 7, remember now, whoever perished being innocent, or where were the upright ever cut off? Even as I have seen, those who plow iniquity and sow trouble reap the same. By the blast of God they perish, and by the breath of His anger they are consumed. So his friend here is telling him, God would not punish the truly righteous, or sustain the wicked. Job must have sinned to deserve such calamity. He's telling him, this has fallen on you for a reason. You've done some terrible thing. You have sinned. And in verse 10, the roaring of the lion, the voice of the fierce lion, and the teeth of the young lions are broken. The old lion perishes for lack of prey, and the cubs of the lionesses are scattered. The lions, the term lion used here figuratively for the wicked, possibly. And Job and his family are, in a sense, being compared to a pride or a group of lions that have been destroyed or have gone through some terrible, terrible things. As you read on down through, starting in verse 12, Eliphaz claims here to have had some type of night vision or some type of dream. Whether or not that is real, it's hard to prove or hard to say. And whether or not it was actually inspired by God or if it was, from Satan or the demons, it's hard to really say that. But he's had this dream, to him. And his summary of all of that is that Job was guilty of some type of sin. And we know that Job was described by God as being blameless and being upright, but he still had sin. And so that partly was true in what Eliphaz, his friend, was saying. But his application of this truth with respect to Job was wrong. It was off base. As he was trying to prove, or he was trying to say to Job that all the suffering and all this that you're going through is directly related to some particular sin that you have committed. Sin or sins that you have committed. And then Job has a response to that. And we'll see that starting in chapter 6. And Job answered and said, "Oh, that my grief were fully weighed, and my calamity laid with it in for the balances. For then it would be heavier than the sand of the sea. Therefore my words have been rash." Job begins here with a response and an admission that, he's going through some pretty severe circumstances. Some pretty terrible things have happened to him. And some of the things that he's said so far may have been rash, or they may have been, out of line or out of what he should have done. So he's admitting that, hey, I'm going through some pretty tough stuff here. Don't pick out everything that I say. Some of my words may be rash. As a lot of what he's saying is due to the fact that the anguish he's going through and just wanting to vent some of what he's going through. We are all, in a sense, like that. We go through experiences, whether it be with our jobs or, with our families or with, some type of sickness or illness, or it could be any number of things. When we experience that, sometimes I guess there's a fine line between complaining and venting. But we, as humans, have a tendency to do that. We just want to vent. I'm guilty of that. I go through things with my job, with customers that aren't happy with what you do, or whatever it is, you feel like, they're not being fair to you. You really get upset, and you just need to vent sometimes. And that's what Job is saying here. I realize, I'm going through some rough stuff here, and some of the things I say might be a little bit rash. So cut me a little bit of slack, and don't pick out everything that I say. Don't pick out every little bit of that. And we know also back in chapter 5, one of the things that this Eliphaz told Job, was to turn to God. And no doubt with all that Job had gone through, he had been praying and fasting and going through all the things that he had. He had obviously turned to God. And so that was kind of a slap in the face to him in a way, because he had obviously been doing that. And in verse 4 of chapter 6, "For the arrows of the Almighty are within me. My spirit drinks in their poison. The terrors of God are arrayed against me." And so Job here is recognizing the fact that, relief that he wanted didn't seem to come immediately from God. Instead, he thinks, God has something against him here. And what he sees more in the immediate future for him is he needs some relief and comfort for his friends. That's what he's counting on from these three friends that are there. And that's one of the lessons that we can learn from this story of Job, is that, his friends come to him to help him, to comfort him, and then they start giving him all these speeches about telling him everything that he's done wrong. All that you're going through, you lost your family, you lost your wealth, you're suffering all this. That's all because you've done something wrong. You did this or you did that, you sinned. You need to turn to God. And that you might apply that to us today with, we see all the prayer requests, people that are going through health issues or, whatever they are, too numerous to mention. But if one of us were to go up to someone in that situation, and we started immediately telling them, okay, you lost your job because you've got this sin, or you're going through this sickness because you've done this sin or this or this. The lesson from this, was that's not what Job needed from his friends. He needed some comforting and encouragement and some compassion from them. And we'll see that as the story goes on. And in verse 5, "Does the wild donkey bray when it has grass, or does the ox low over its fodder?" Job here is pointing out that these animals cry out when they're hungry. And he was saying for himself, I'm crying out in this situation because I need nourishment. And that nourishment that he needed was this relief and comfort that he was seeking from his friends. And in verse 6, "Can flavorless food be eaten without salt? Or is there any taste in the white of an egg? My soul refuses to touch them. They are as loathsome food to me." And so he's saying this tasteless food here that his friend is giving him. You know, that's not what he needs. You know, it turns his stomach in a sense. You know, Job needed nourishment from his friends, not this tasteless food or all these things that they're telling that he's done wrong. And we see again in verse 8, "Oh, that I might have my request, that God would grant me the thing that I long for, that it would please God to crush me, that He would loose His hand and cut me off." You know, Job is wishing here that he could just die to get relief from what he's going through. You know, only if God would just let me die. You know, and he almost thinks that if he could die right now, maybe he could still have a future. In verse 10, "Then I would still have comfort, though in anguish I would exult. Let him not spare, for I have not concealed the words of the Holy One." So Job might be at this point getting a little concerned that if this trial goes on much longer, he may actually get to the point where he curses God or turns his back on God. He may be maybe at the point where he's starting to wonder, you know, how much more of this ordeal can I take? It would be better for me right now if God would just crush me, let me die, and then I'll worry about it later. But if it goes on much further, I don't know how I'm going to handle it. Now, Job just wanted some relief, just wanted to die. And in verse 14, "To him who is afflicted, kindness should be shown by his friend, even though he forsakes the fear of the Almighty." What Job is saying here at this point is that, you know, a suffering person, someone going through something like he's going through, you know, should be treated kindly by their friends. You know, and even if the person going through the problem or the difficulty, even if that person turns from God, sort of turns their back on God, they still deserve for us to show them kindness. You know, it may be that they still need, you know, in a sense, to be saved, so to speak. You'll need some spiritual help also. But the more immediate need for them in their situation is that compassion, you know, that nourishment, that kindness. You know, that doesn't mean that later on they can't get some spiritual advice or some spiritual help, but the point in this situation is, you know, as Job is explaining, is that, you know, what he really wants at this point is some nourishment and some comfort for his friends. You know, he doesn't want them to come to him and tell him all the things that he's done wrong. You know, he's obviously going through a terrible, terrible ordeal, and he's obviously has turned to God, prayed to God, you know, and he doesn't need to hear from his friends about how he sinned or all the bad things that he's done. You know, what he's after here is some compassion and some nourishment from his friends. You know, just a little simple human kindness. You know, and all this that he's heard so far from his friends, you know, it's doing him no good. You know, he didn't want to hear that. And then we'll move on over to chapter 7. In verse 6, "My days are swifter than a weaver's shuttle and are spent without hope." It says, "Oh, remember that my life is a breath. My eye will never again see good. The eye of him who sees me will see me no more. While your eyes are on me, I shall no longer be. As the cloud disappears and vanishes away, so he who goes down to the grave does not come up. He shall never return to his house, nor shall his place know him any more. Therefore I will not restrain my mouth. I will speak in the anguish of my spirit. I will complain in the bitterness of my soul." You know, he may in a sense think that his days are running out. You know, my time is almost up. I'd just like to have some answers. You know, I'd like to know, you know, from God, you know, why are you doing this to me? You know, what have I done to deserve this? You know, he just would like to have some answers there. And as the expositor's Bible commentary notes regarding the disputes that go on in these chapters, you know, chapters 3 through 27, says Job repeatedly struggles over God's justice and his own vindication. This will get worse as we go along through the book of Job. Now, how is it then that God will later proclaim Job is right and his friends are all wrong? Now, this commentary continues. There's a significant difference between their speeches come from a different relationship with God. Job is determined to be absolutely honest with God. Job tells God everything, every tear and every doubt. They tell God nothing. They only talk about God. You know, his friends talk about God, not to God. This should be kept in mind as we might tend to become impatient with Job. We should also keep in mind that despite all these hair-raising things that Job says, you know, in his disputes, he never asks for restoration from God. I'll repeat that. You know, we should keep in mind that despite all the hair-raising things that Job will say, he never asks for restoration from God. His main concern through all of this is his relationship with God. And that's why Job puts so much stress on vindication. And without vindication, all that he is suffering is proof that God is his enemy. And so when Job calls God his enemy, you know, we as the reader must remember these words of poetic passion used analogically as the total context proved. You know, in these disputes that Job has, you know, Job is pouring out his heart in a flood of emotion, you know, with all that he's going through. But he also is pouring that out in the right direction. You know, if you are going to complain about something, you know, God would be the proper complaint department to send that complaint to, you know, as Job did. You know, in verse 11 of chapter 7. It says, therefore I will not restrain my mouth. I will speak in the anguish of my spirit. I will complain in the bitterness of my soul. And so Job is sending his complaint, if you will, to God. You know, God is the one that has the power to resolve the problems, the complaints that Job has. You know, and it's really remarkable that through all of this, what's remarkable about Job is that despite the fact he sees his grief and suffering as coming from God, you know, he is nevertheless determined. He is determined to hang in there with God. You know, he doesn't curse God. He doesn't turn his back on God through all of that. You know, as we saw in the beginning of the book, Satan was so sure that if you just let me have an attack at Job, he will turn his back on you. He will curse you. But Job, so far, has proved that not to be the case. We'll look at the second one of Job's friends in chapter 8, is Bildad. And we saw that his first friend, Eliphaz, was sort of gentle on Job. You know, he started out, you know, in attempting a word, you know, talking sort of gently to him. But we see Bildad coming at Job right off the bat. Verse 2, how long will you speak these things, and the words of your mouth be like a strong wind? You know, he comes at Job right off the bat. You know, how long will you speak this nonsense you're talking about? You know, He says, you know, with all that Job has said, you know, he's acknowledging, you're right. Yes, Job, you're right about what you've said. You know, you are full of hot air. And in verse 3, you know, does God subvert judgment or does the Almighty pervert justice? You know, God cannot be unjust, is what he's telling his friend here, what Bildad is telling Job at this point. In verse 4, if your sons have sinned against him, he has cast them away for their transgression. So he's telling him, okay, Job, you and your family are receiving the punishment that you deserve. You and your family have done something really bad. You're getting the punishment you deserve from God. In verse 5, if you would earnestly seek God and make your supplication to the Almighty, so he's telling him here to seek God's mercy. If you were pure and upright, surely now he would awake for you and prosper your rightful habitation. So he's telling him, okay, if you deserve the mercy that you're seeking from God. Verse 7, though your beginning was small, yet your latter end would increase abundantly. So he's, Bildad is telling Job in these verses, you've done something wrong, you're getting the punishment you deserve. You need to seek God's mercy, and if you deserve mercy, then God will restore you. And but what Bildad failed to see in all of this is that mercy implies the forgiveness that one receives even though he does not deserve it. And one of the lessons for all of us to learn from this book of Job is the fact that we and all people are wholly undeserving. You know, we're completely undeserving of the grace that God gives us, and the mercy He shows us. And we don't deserve what God gives us. And in verse, we'll move on to chapter 9. This is Job's response to Bildad. And Job answered and said, truly I know it is so, but how can a man be righteous before God? And he's recognizing here that what you say, what you've said to me, is true in principle. You know, but I'm innocent. I'm still innocent. You know, and how can I be innocent before God? You know, because God has set Himself against me. You know, God is doing all this to me. So how can I be innocent before God? In verse 3, if one wished to contend with him, he could not answer him one time out of 1,000. And when there's one of the study Bibles talks about the verbs and the words used here would be the like the idea of someone taking a legal case against God. And this would almost be like Job suing God, or Job taking God to court, you know, with what he's saying here. You know, and then if he did that, you know, how could I answer God? You know, if Job were to find himself in a cross examination from God, he's saying, how can I answer him? How can I answer God? And in verse 17, for he crushes me with a tempest and multiplies my wounds without cause. Actually, chapter 10. We'll move on to that. Chapter 10, verse 17. You know, this is still Job's response. It says, you renew your witness against me and increase your indignation toward me. Changes and war are ever with me. And the Nelson Study Bible states regarding this particular verse, you know, the phrase, you renew your witness against me, is a legal metaphor that may refer to each new aspect of Job's illness. You know, in the event, or in the equivalent war metaphor, you know, the Lord was sending changes or troop reinforcements, if you will, against him. Now, this could be a reference to Job's friends. Now, perhaps Job viewed them as sent by God to condemn him even further. And in verse 20 and 22 of chapter 10, "Are not my days few? You know, cease, leave me alone, that I may take a little comfort before I go to the place from which I shall not return, to the land of darkness and the shadow of death, a land as dark as darkness itself, as the shadow of death without any order, where even the light is like darkness." You know, Job is ending here, you know, by asking God to just leave him alone for a few days, you know, before he dies. You know, just like, "I've had enough. You know, can you please just leave me alone for a few days and let me die? You know, let me have some type of rest." And then before he escapes this pain and this suffering that he's going through, and his escape, he sees in this situation as being death. And we'll not go any further with this today, but again, you can read on through the book of Job, and you're going to see the next friend that talks to Job is Zophar. But what you'll find as you read through this is that these three friends, you know, keep accusing Job of some type of sin. You know, it's all your fault. You've done something to deserve this. Why don't you repent? Why don't you pray? Why don't you seek God? And then if you're deserving of that, you know, God will restore you. So some lessons quickly that we can learn so far from what we've looked at in today's part of the book of Job is that we need to be compassionate when someone is suffering. And when someone is reaching out for that nourishment from others or that kindness, you know, we need to show them compassion rather than immediately start blasting them with, "Well, you've done this or you've done something to deserve this. You know, you need to go pray to God and God will fix it." So show compassion when others are suffering. Another lesson is that none of us deserve the mercy and the grace that God gives us. You know, we don't deserve what God gives us. We don't deserve His mercy and grace. And finally, from Job's example of what we've seen so far, is that in all that he asked for, he never asked for restoration. You know, Job did not desire that God would restore all of his wealth. You know, I'm sure he missed his wealth. I'm sure he missed his family. He'd like to have his health back. But Job didn't ask for restoration. The one thing Job was concerned about, more than all of that, is his relationship with God. And that lesson would certainly apply for us also. We will, in March, the March Bible study, we'll take a break from the book of Job. Since it's right before Passover, I'd like to look at the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. Now look at it from a medical standpoint. Maybe, I don't think in a way it'll really be gruesome, but I want to look at from a medical standpoint so we can maybe understand a little bit more about what Christ went through in the crucifixion. So the Bible study in March will be on the crucifixion of Jesus Christ. And then, probably in April, we'll pick back up with Job. So, thank you all for staying. Hope it is helpful.